This is Geek Speak. We're broadcasting live from the Central Coast of California. Today's October 8th. In the first half of the show, we'll be doing the Geek News. Of course, we'll be talking a little bit about pledging to KOSP. And in the second half, a special guest is joining us to talk a little bit about AT&T's services, what they're actually trying to bill you and talk to you about, and what you're actually going to get if you switch over to them. It's time now for Geek Speak.
So you're living in a world that you don't know nothing about. Sitting at your keyboard paralyzed with doubt. But just sit tight, we're here to help you out. We don't know it all, but we'll tell you what we found out. And if it's all Greek to you, then let us speak geek to you. We're here each week for you on your radio.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KOSP. Today's theme is by Michael Saunderson. Thank you, Michael. If you'd like to participate by giving us a theme for Geek Speak, we'd love to play it on air. This is a community member and person that donates to the show. And Michael, thank you for doing all the things you do for us. And thank you all for doing the things you do. The pledges that you provide to KOSP makes KOSP run. And I really want to appreciate you directly for calling, because I know you will during the show. Of course, we're taking your pledges the entire hour of Geek Speak. And I'm expecting to hear from a lot of you. The number is 1-800-655-5877. The news reports on KOSP, the programs on KOSP are just available on the radio. Many of the features and programs we produce are available when you want them at our newly upgraded website, kosp.org. Steve Lawford, the webmaster and a media expert here at KOSP, is a good friend of mine, and we've been chatting about all the work he's been doing, and I have been very impressed with all he's been doing. And in the air with me is Terry Green. Hi.
Hi.
Terry Green is the station manager.
The last possible geek off the bench here at KUSP.
We have breaking news in downtown Santa Cruz, and Miles is en route, but there's something going on. So he'll be here momentarily. But while we're waiting, would you like to thank some of the people that donated?
I would very much like to do some quick thank yous. These are all folks who called in right at the end of Ask Dr. Don to help us meet our matching gift for that show. We're still tallying the results to see if we have indeed made that match. But in the meantime, it's a great opportunity to thank Miriam in Monterey, thank Bobby in Carmel Valley, and Marilyn in Felton. Loves Dr. Don as an absolute resource, she says. T. Mike in Santa Cruz, thank you, T. Mike. Michael in Monterey, Priscilla in Felton, Helen in Scotts Valley, Don in Scotts Valley, Diane in Castroville, Nicolette Buddy and Meg in Watsonville, and Billy in Santa Cruz, just some of the folks who are making KUSP happen this morning.
And you can do that as well, of course, by calling 1-800-655-5877. You call in during Geek Speak. Luckily, Miles will thank you on air, and we all like Miles' voice, especially when he's here. We'll go ahead and the first story we're going to talk about a little bit today, Terry, is the death of Steve Jobs. Of course, it's all over the news.
Right. If there's a tech story that blanketed worldwide media like this, I can't imagine what it would have been.
Yeah.
In my whole, you know, geeky life.
It's true. It's true. And it's, you know, Al Luckow, who's a regular on Geek Speak, has had some great things to say about Steve Jobs. He's met him and interacted with him. He's a friend of Steve Wozniak. And of course, I'm watching the news and keeping up to date. I've been following Steve Wozniak's site, woz.org, and all these posts from people, these memorials, these tributes, this great interview of Woz talking personally about his friend has really been touching. It's been, you know, because of that kind of closeness I have to them, I've been really hitting it, you know, that mm-hmm. very emotional thing.
Right.
At the same time, my journalistic side is going, why are we spending so much time on this to some degree? It's just one guy. But it really, he fundamentally changed how we deal with technology.
And it goes back to one of the points that I think really emerged in the coverage is that how Apple moved beyond the niche of a technology company to really influence how deeply, how many people's lives, especially after he returned to Apple and they moved so decisively into consumer products. Mm-hmm. And that kind of personal relationship that people have with Apple products is why I think people reacted so strongly to Steve's passing. I mean, above and beyond, you know, that it was, you know, that it was too early and, you know, that it was the end of kind of a long, sad story. And that's, that gets you as a, you know, as a listener, as a, as a journalist. But, you know, there's so many aspects to the Apple story and to his personal story that I think touched a lot of people.
Yeah. You know, in talking about the products, I mean, I'm a big Mac consumer, Apple consumer, right? I've got a Macintosh in front of me, I've got an iPhone in my pocket, I've got an iPad at home. And it's, to me, having all that stuff brings up these whistles of, well, don't be sold, don't be owned by Apple. You know, and Apple, you know, in this last year, we've covered stories where they are the largest company in the world now.
Exactly, right.
Right.
And it's underdog. Apple's worth more than any other company on earth, which is...
And, you know, for a long time, the underdog side of it was one of the compelling things for me, was that, you know, being a geek and being teased at school and having that experience of never, of always trying to be on top, I felt good about Apple from that perspective. Now they're on top, right? And now it's kind of like, oh, wait a second.
What happened?
And at the same time, I'm impressed with their products, and they definitely push things forward.
We've been thinking a lot, you know, in the newsroom here this week about whether we're overdoing it. We actually did pass on some special coverage of Steve that we might have broadcast but chose not to. And one of the pieces of bias that we all thought about is that folks who work in media almost without exception depend on Apple products, just, you know, as this show does, as you just said. I mean, there's a, you know, this room is festooned with Apple portable computers when we do Geek Speak. And it does that affect our news judgment? Did it affect our news judgment this week? You know, it's hard to say. I mean, but it's one of the things that you're mindful of when someone, you know, who's at the head of a company that is so close to you, you know, as a journalist, as a reporter, as a radio guy. It's a very, it's a unique situation. I can't imagine any other public figure having as direct, you know, whose passing would have as direct an impact on folks who cover the news, you know, as
it's true.
Steve.
It's true. Of course, you know, anything that hits the news makers hard. Definitely gets covered more, right?
Right.
So there's that issue. So today's show, we have a goal of $1,800. It can be matched easily by people calling during the show and donating to the station. And of course, the money that comes in supports the entire everything we do on KOSP. And you're a listener to KOSP, so you know how important it is to your life. And all we're asking for you to do is represent that with a little bit of capital.
Your contribution to KUSP is an investment. It's an investment in community-based public radio. You spend a few minutes to make a contribution today during our fall drive, either by calling us on the phone or making a gift online. You guarantee many hours of listening, you know, in the months and years ahead. And your membership to KUSP is an amazing value. Compare what a KUSP membership is, you know, is worth to other media that you participate in, and then compare the cost. I think this station comes out on the plus side of that equation. Call us 1-888-777-1507. That's 888-777-1507. You'll get right through to one of our volunteers ready to answer the phone. You can also give online at kusp.org. Click on the big donate button. How much to give? Do what's right for your household, for your family, for you. Most people are, you know, our average gift around here is about $120, but that doesn't have to be the right number for you. It's whatever works for you. That's how KUSP works. That's what makes us different than other subscriber-based media. You know, you don't get to negotiate with Rolling Stone or Wired, you know, or the Santa Cruz Sentinel.
You pay the sticker price on those things.
Pretty much. Here, you give what it's worth to you. We hope it's worth a lot. We hope you can give generously, but every gift is generous.
And to do that generous gift right now, 1-888-777-1507. Again, that's 1-888-777-1507. Miles is joining us. Good morning, Miles. Please take a seat. That's wonderful. And Terry, thank you so much for being here today.
Sure.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'll be over here.
All right. Well, you're welcome to be on at any point, sir. Please feel free. I just want to mention one news story, Miles, gets settled in. Not a good thing. You know the drone fleet, Miles, that these flying planes that have no people in them that scan the area.
Right. War without personal risk. Yes.
Yes, exactly. Right. Basically, it's a technical risk. It can get shot down, but of course, there's nobody piloting the thing locally. It's actually being piloted remotely. Well, it turns out, unfortunately, there's a virus in the network. And Here's a little bit of a quote about it. We keep wiping it off, and it keeps coming back. It says a source familiar with the network infection that basically infects these the network that the drones are on. We think it's been benign, but we just don't know. Now, to me, having flying planes that actually have artillery with them, that then there happens to be a virus on the network, those two things don't work for me.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why. What do you think about that, Miles?
Oh, I don't know. Is it the blue sky of death?
It's exactly right. It's the Terminator event, right? So what's going on is it looks like there's a keyloader, now a keylogger. And what a keylogger virus is basically, it's the thing that allows people to steal your bank information, right? So a virus gets infects your machine. And then when you use that machine, all of your key commands get recorded, made in a text file, and sent out to some other remote source. And in your personal life, that means that the remote source can most likely get onto your website, get onto your bank account, and drain your bank account. So it's not a good thing at all. And it's an easy thing to install. Anytime someone has a physical access to a computer, it can be installed within minutes. And there's even hardware solutions that actually pop in between the keyboard and the computer that does this as well, and then transmits it through the network as well, or even through wirelessly. So you can do it's a very good attack to do on a computer, because you really, after you watch the machine for a few days, you can do anything you want on the machine. Now, it's probable that this is just a typical virus that happens to pass around. That's how they propagate, right?
A typical virus? I mean, typical viruses are, to be blunt, run on x86 processors and Windows.
Yeah.
What is an x86 processor and Windows doing on a military drone?
Well, I think what's going on is that these machines are being managed by human beings that are flying it, right? And so there's a cockpit, if you will, for every drone. So let me show you that. Let me show you a picture.
Okay, and so Windows isn't on the drone. It's on the computer controlling the drone.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong? You know, and on top of this, of course, I would assume that these machines are extremely hardened in the sense that they're not online. But then again, if they're not online, how'd the virus get in? You know, even here at KOSP, we have a private network that handles our audio stream, and we don't let that network play with the internet, because those two are not what we do, right? We do radio. We don't do, let's test viruses on our systems. So, Terry, am I right? We're totally
You are exactly right. That, you know,
and it's kind of a pain.
It is a major management dilemma to be constantly vigilant about separating the networks that have the things that are vital to your business from the other part of the business that's equally vital.
I mean,
we want people to pledge at KUSP.org. That's a relatively vital part of it. But
it's not like drone crafts that can blow up buildings.
I sincerely hope that's true.
Now, of course,
because I know there are some people in the audience wondering, well, why is it so hard? Why did it? Imagine this: you have a website like KUSP.org, which you can pledge at, and please do. And that is a public resource. In other words, we want you to get to there.
That's right.
But we also don't want people getting in. Do you see the disconnect there?
There's definitely a problem. Yeah.
We just want you in so far.
Right. The same resource that we need to give access to the outside world so that people can communicate with us is the exact same portal that people can come back to us. It's like having a house with no windows, and you're like, you know what? I really like a window there.
Right.
But a burglar can get in.
And it's the trade-off. The question I have is, if you've got planes that are being traveled, that are being piloted remotely, and they actually, you know, can fly around, crash, blow up things, this is not a resource you want access to publicly. I'm sorry, I just don't see a reason for it. So that's my little take on it, if you will.
I hope we are able to follow this story, you know, in the weeks and months to come, because when it blew up this week, it did give me an eye roll moment.
Yeah. Now, from the simple idea, this is probably what happened. Someone's home computer got infected. That same person took a USB from their home computer to work for some reason and plugged in to share a file or who knows what. And when they did that, the virus got transferred. So most likely it was that kind of thing, which means that it's possible that in that network, the keylog information is actually not going anywhere. And I am sure that... I have faith, if you will, that there's some people dealing with this issue. So let's move on to the next news story. Miles, what is it?
It's been covered before in the news, but this is Geek Speak, so farewell, Steve Jobs.
Yes, and we just did that. like 4 minutes ago.
Oh, I see how it is.
That's how we were filling for time.
Oh, I see how it is.
With the last geek off the bench.
Okay, fine.
Covering for you.
And the last product that he oversaw being released was the iPhone 4S.
Mm-hmm.
And the iPhone 4S has been a very curious update to it. Normally, I don't do product news, but hey, you know, Apple, you know, needs a little kick
up.
It's
interesting.
Anyway,
normally, you don't. Normally, you focus on political issues and things of that nature, social issues.
And so I was looking at it because I'm a geek. I'm going, hey, is that better than what I got?
It is, yeah.
And it is better than what I got, but it reminds me very much of when the iPad 2 came out versus the iPad 1.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how much was it worth it to get a new one? And it really, when the iPhone first came out, blew the competition away. I mean, it took them 2 years to even get back to what the original one was at. And then the Android kind of started doing a little leapfrog, but each time a new iPhone came out, it jumped up a little ahead, if even for a few months. This one's come out, and there's this question of like, well, now they're maybe coming to parity, or
For example, I mean, some of the qualities about it, like the dual core processor, the higher end camera. First off, the dual core processor doesn't really matter unless you use it. But then the higher end camera. But these things have been in Android phones already, so it's not like this is completely different. And that's the thing. That's why they didn't name it the 5, right? That's why they put the S on it.
Have dual core processors been in the Androids?
You know,
I haven't been following along with that.
But again, it's not a feature that's like, I need that. It's more about what it can do for you.
I would think it would help with many. With many features.
I'm sure
on
Siri
there.
Is using that.
I mean, most people who use their iPhone use multiple functions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're opening up one app, they're going to the next app, and being able to process those things in the background.
Yeah.
Just off the bat, seems like a win to me.
I totally get your perspective, though. The iPad versus the iPad 2. Yeah, it had some more bells and features, but the fundamental difference about it isn't very different, right? It's still that tablet in your hand that you can watch media on, you can read your email, and it's easy to use and fun to use. That those aspects, which were new, new, are not different between the iPad and the iPad 2.
Right, the iPad 2 was a faster processor with a camera.
Right.
And the iPhone 4S is a faster processor
with
slightly better camera. it takes away the arguments of like, oh well, the iPhone was only 720p, now it's 1080p, and it's like, okay, you took away that argument. To be honest, what I'm looking forward to is iOS 5, but that isn't a new product that you buy from Apple. That's something you just download if you have an iPhone 3S.
You'll probably be forced to do it,
or 3GS. Or
you want to forward promote your next news story? Tell me what it is. What are you going to talk about next, Miles?
That's a fine question.
Oh, yeah? Okay, you've been through
it. No, I'm going to talk about electron counts and earthquakes.
Earthquakes and electron counts?
Yes.
Ooh, I don't know how those go together. That's going to be good. I want to mention that we are taking pledges right now, and you're listening to KOSP. You listen to KOSP a lot. You love the station, and I know this because you hear my voice. And if you're listening to KOSP a lot, especially today and in the next week, you're going to hear us mention that we do need your support. The show is important to you. The station is important to you. And so it's time for you to participate by sending us some money. Now, it's really crucial in times like this. I really appreciate it. When we have new listeners that have never pledged before, a member that's never become a member, and I mean that in the sense that you're a member because you pay attention to the station and it's important to you, but until you actually tell us that in a financial way, we don't know about you, right? So it's time now to tell us who you are. We talk about what we do, who we are, all the time. And now it's time for you to pick up the phone and say, this is who I am, and this is about how much KOSP is worth to me. Here's my pledge. And you can do that right now very simply by calling us or by going to our website.
And as if that is not sufficient incentive, we have a matching gift from a UCSC faculty member who especially encourages UCSC faculty, staff, and students to support KUSP and support GeekSpeak. He will match every pledge that we receive on GeekSpeak up to $750.
Thank you, UCSC colleague. I work up at UCSC. I don't mention that very much, but it is a wonderful place to be. And I love when we have connections between UCSC and the community at large. It's hard playing that role between KOSP and UCSC because, of course, there's different goals. But in the same sense, we're this large community. I really appreciate the matching donation. That means that as you donate now, in the next 45 minutes, every one of your dollars will be matched by this UCSC faculty member, and I really appreciate that.
And becoming a member of KUSP may be the easiest thing you do all day, like calling up GeekSpeak and making a pledge. All you have to do is pick up the phone, make a call. You talk to a friendly volunteer who will ask a few easy questions, and then you're done.
Yeah.
Start the process now. Call 1-888-777-1507. That's 1-888-777-1507. Or pledge online at our secure website, KUSP.org. You can make this campaign a big success for KUSP and public radio.
And it is a very rewarding experience. 888-777-1507 or KUSP.org. Miles, do tell us about earthquakes.
Something they noticed after the March Japanese earthquake was they were noticing these weird electron counts up in the ionosphere. 185 miles up in the sky. And they were the thing that was very interesting about this was it didn't seem like it was a consequence after the earthquake. It seemed like it was showing up before the earthquake.
Is this bias?
Well,
I mean, does it show up all the time and they just started looking for anomalies? Is it anomaly hunting? Or is this seem to really correlate?
It seems to really correlate. They started noticing these electron counts escalating about 40 minutes before the earthquake began.
Whoa.
And so they're wondering...
Theories? Anyone? What's going on? Do they know?
That would be a very interesting thing. I'm not a planetary geologist, so...
Could you imagine we have a satellite system in 20 years that knows a half an hour before an earthquake? It'd be fantastic.
Yes, it would.
Wow. Okay, so I want to pull out some ideas out of my hat, but it would be complete...
I know. I have these ideas of like the rock is rubbing against each other and then it's creating an electrical charge.
Right.
And
I was thinking that God was just telling us. Oh, no. All right. I mean, piezoelectric effects, right? Crystals under stress. Changing. Uh-huh. Right. I could see that.
But I don't know. I don't know.
It seems too good to be true. It seems like, wait a second. I mean, what could possibly underground miles affect atmosphere,
185
miles up.
The ionosphere, yeah.
Got any theories?
Yeah. I've got some harebrained theories. Okay. And you know, I am not a physicist. You know, I am not a geologist.
You're a computer programmer.
What if the earthquake was a result of stuff that was going on near the core, near the mantle, mm-hmm. so you had a shift in the magnetic field? Because of shifting... No, okay,
that's
I fail.
Weak, man. That's really
weak. I fail.
But I appreciate you. let me make sure to let you know right now that KUSP co-sponsors Flip for Whales, a sunset cruise featuring National Geographic photographer Charles Flip Nicklin. Friday, October 21st from 4 to 7 p.m., proceeds benefit Marine Life Studies research and education programs for kids. Information is at marinelifestudies.org. GeekSpeak on KUSP is supported by Dr. Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in handcrafted dentistry from start to finish, using digital technology for less radiation, offering one appointment crowns and veneers. Information at 423-2447. Geek bit today, Mr. Elam?
No, I don't.
All right. Well, just put out the phone number. This is the Geek Bit, 888-777-1507. We have a $750 matching grant from a faculty member at UCSC. Thank you so much for doing that, especially to those people that work at UCSC, go to school at UCSC. Please take this opportunity to have a colleague push you into donating to a station that you already like and already appreciate. Again, the phone number is 888-777-1507. Today's goal is doable and available and possible for us. The goal is $1,800 for the show. All you have to do right now is give us a call and we'll get closer to that, I promise. 888-777-1507. And, you know, speaking of phone calls, I volunteer at a local community center in Ben Lomond and recently got an internet connection there. And I went through AT&T and I got to say, the experience left a bad taste in my mouth because when I called AT&T, I found out about this Uline service. They said, yeah, it's fiber. We're dropping fiber all over the place. It's fiber, 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 fiber. I'm like, wow, AT&T is really getting pushed in this area by Comcast to provide higher internet speeds. And so I got to check this out. So the rep comes in to set up my Uline service and he pulls out a DSL box. And I go, that's DSL. He's like, no, this is Uline. Man, it ticked me off. And from
Wait, did it cost more?
No, it's the DSL.
Okay, yeah.
They're just packaging in that way, I think. But so Chris Nichols is the owner and operator, along with his wife, Peggy Dolgenis, from Cruise.io Internet, one of the oldest ISPs in the United States, I believe. And Chris, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. And may I just add to your listeners that they should all donate to KUSP.
Awesome.
Actually, isn't Cruise.io one of the oldest in the world?
I think so. What do you think, Chris?
We actually predate the internet itself. We were starting in what was then called the community networking movement in as early as 1984.
Okay, and AT&T wasn't doing anything for you at that point. So in 1996, the Telecom Act got passed, and one of the stipulations of this was, yeah, big telcos, you can put infrastructure in, but the government subsidized you, so that infrastructure you need to share with local ISPs. So that when DSL came about and such, you were able to package DSL through AT&T's wires. Is that a good synopsis of what happens?
Yeah, that's basically it. The government didn't really subsidize the phone companies so much as give them a monopoly, which guaranteed a return on their investment, and then. As part of that monopoly, gave them rights of way for infrastructure like underground cable and telephone poles and whatnot at zero or greatly reduced rates.
I see.
And if somebody would do that for Cruise.io, boy, would I be happy.
So you've been able to sell DSL at the same rate, basically, as AT&T.
No, we are not. Under the 1996 Telecom Act, AT&T was... what at that time were the regional Bell operating companies that were broken off from AT&T, and then the Death Star sort of collected the pieces and is reforming.
I think it's more
AT&T,
the Terminator 2. Yeah.
The phone companies were forced through this act to make facilities available in their central office to competitive local exchange carriers, CLECs, like us, and provide access to their copper loops between the central office and the end user home, for instance, Park Hall and Ben Lomond.
Mm-hmm. So what you do right now is you provide the internet access, and the copper to the home is provided by AT&T.
Yes, actually, what we do with our DSL-1 product is we wholesale AT&T's DSL product. And the reason I laugh and say we can't provide it at the same price AT&T does is because their lawyers have managed to create an environment whereby the wholesale rate to us is within a very small margin of what their retail rate is to their customers. So,
and then on top of that, they put it the 3 months cheaper.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I could have sworn that a lot of that infrastructure for the phones was paid through by taxes added to our phone bill for many, many years.
Yeah, there's a lot of taxes on the phone bill, especially the FUSF, the Federal Universal Service Fund, which is supposed to subsidize the build-out of telecommunications infrastructure in rural areas where there's no economic incentive for the phone companies to provide service. You need a certain density of people within a geographic area to make money on the build-out of the infrastructure. So the FUSF fund, for instance, was designed to subsidize build-out of telephones to the rural areas and schools and libraries and things like that.
Okay, so let's get to this U-verse package that AT&T is smothering people's mailboxes with, right? Everywhere I see in this area, because AT&T is the phone provider, there is this U-verse package deal. Oh, this is great, and it's fiber, and it's really fast. And I wish I had recorded my conversation with the tech support people. I was in a real rush, so I didn't even contact Cruise.io, which was, I still regret. And so when the guy comes in and pulls out this DSL box, I'm like, that's DSL. He's like, well, this is U-verse, and it's got a label on it, you know. I'm like, that's a DSL modem. And he kind of quietly goes, yeah, but I'm not supposed to say that to you. It's like, what's going on? What's forcing AT&T to be this disingenuous with its service?
Well, I think it's not just AT&T, taking liberties with the English language as specified in the dictionary. I mean, that's just marketing.
That's just corporations, yeah.
Yeah, it's UVerse is based on either ADSL 2 Plus technology, which is like the next generation DSL protocol, or at the higher speeds VDSL, which is, you know, very DSL. And it is technically true that there is fiber components in the network that delivers, you know, the broadband telephone and cable TV over the copper. So
because what's going on is they're increasing their fiber connections to the local distros, and then from there it still goes copper to the home because, of course, it's too expensive to put an infrastructure of fiber all the way to the home.
Right.
So because they're increasing their network's fiber activity to the central hub spots, those downtown spots that, you know, actually break off the copper to your home, because of that, they're able to say it's fiber because partially it's fiber.
Yeah, and that's and so it's correct. With DSL technology, ADSL 2 Plus, you really want to reduce the mileage of copper between the customer, Park Hall, and the central office. What's hilarious to me in this case that you've related is that Park Hall is basically just down the street from the Ben Lomond central office. So as far as your loop between Park Hall and the Ben Lomond central office, it's probably all copper.
Right, right. And it's probably also relatively close, so they were able to max that DSL speed up a bit.
Right. Yeah. For instance, we're rolling out an ADSL 2 Plus product ourselves that is based on ADSL 2 Plus equipment in the central office that goes copper all the way out to the customer. And you can get basically double the speeds of DSL 1 with it up to, we're, you know, rolling it out slowly and experimenting, but up to about 13, 14,000 feet.
And what kind of speeds are we talking about?
Well, I'm on the west side, and according to our diagnostics, I have about 9,600 feet of copper between me and the Santa Cruz One central office down there on Walnut. And I went from, you know, getting speeds with AT&T DSL One wholesale, you know, retailed by Cruzeo, of about 3.5 megabits, and now I'm getting about 7.5 megabits.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Sweet.
Yeah, that's nice.
It's pretty good when you don't look at the rest of the world.
Excuse me?
When you don't look at Japan, it looks awesome.
Well, one of the great things about ADSL 2, which I'm excited about because next week I'm going to be doing this, is that it does true bonding with two lines. In other words, I'm going to, you know, have our team, like, come out, install a new phone line, do the inside wiring, and put the bonded modem on, and I will be able to get aggregate bandwidth of about 15 or 20 megabits.
So let me translate that real quick. Every home that has a phone line going to it actually has two phone lines in it. That's when they first ran them, they ran two twisted pairs. And so if you've ever opened a phone box as a kid or something and stuck your tongue on it and got electrocuted, there's a red and a black and a yellow and a green, and the red and the green are one line, the black and yellow are the other line. And normally when you add a second line to your home, like we all did in early internet connections to get internet, modem dedicated, you use the yellow and the black. So what you're saying is you get a DSL modem which actually uses both at the same time and merges it together, and it doubles your bandwidth.
I love how you're making this universal comment that we all electrocuted ourselves at one time with a phone line. That
not only did I do that, I did it with
that. We all got a second line as opposed to a lot of us who just had the modem on the same line and people kept getting a busy signal, or the call waiting would bump us off.
Right. You had to dial the pound whatever to turn off call waiting when you went online. Or your
JPEGs
wouldn't download.
Lyle, my childhood apparently had a lot more common sense involved than yours.
Well, you know what happened is, like, we had an extra phone line in the house, and so I went ahead and wired it up. I was like, oh, well, we're not going to spend the $80 to have some phone guy do it. I know electronics. I can do this. So I go down there, and I'm, like, peeling. But I don't have my strippers, right? And it's just a copper line with a little tiny shielding. So I stick it in my mouth and strip it, and that's when the phone rang. And you know what? That's 110 volts, and that
hurts
a lot.
It goes from 48 volts DC to 110 AC. Yow!
So, luckily I only had one lead in my mouth, so it didn't... It didn't burn me.
And this all explains the Lyle that we know today.
Hey, thank you, Chris, so much for being there for us, letting us know what's going on with this.
Yeah, beware of marketing, my friends. Read the fine print.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you, Chris, for
all right,
joining
talk
us.
Talk to you soon.
Take care.
Bye.
Chris Nichols is co-founder, along with his wife, of Cruise IO Internet, the oldest ISP predating the internet in the globe, something like that.
At least one of them, yeah.
Yeah. Get some.
And a shout out to new KOSP pledge member Sean Loveland from Colorado.
Wait, let me tell you a little story about Sean. Okay, so last night we go on Google Plus, me and Ben, and you weren't around, Miles, because you're just horrible, and Jordan. And I went ahead and made a video group. You know, what are they called? Hangouts. And I invited the GeekSpeak listeners that are part of my community, like 74 GeekSpeak listeners signed up and are part of my circles on Google Plus. So I added it, and all of a sudden this guy Sean shows up, and we're like, hi, who are you? And this is Sean. He joined us for probably an hour and a half. We talked about his bead work. We talked about his cool car. He uses this bicycle that's got a complete shell around it to commute 40 miles to Boulder, I want to say. And a really cool guy. And anyway, it was a blast connecting with listeners at that level. And it's neat to see that our community expands outside of the central coast of California all the way out there. And I guess he's listening live today. I saw him mention it. And Sean, thanks so much for joining us last night. And thanks for being on air. And thanks for your contribution.
And also a thank you to Ted from Santa Cruz, Melissa from Santa Cruz, and new subscriber Matthew, also from Santa Cruz. And I just want to point out, as certain individuals refer to me as evil, and I have been known as the evil geek before, I don't remember getting an invite to that on Google Plus, so...
Oh, I invited you 3 times.
Oh.
Yeah. And then later, after we finished, I cried, and I looked at pictures of you.
Beware of marketing.
Hey, listen, every once in a while I mention that I did grow up at KOSP. My father used to be here, did a show for years called In the Green Room, and I used to come in, ditch school, and hang out in the air room and go and play LPs in the back room and record them and rip them and learn how to cut and mix actual analog tape at the station.
And there's a room for them underneath the stairs.
And I mention that because, to me, of course, KOSP is a second home in a lot of ways. And I have a lot of deep, deep affection for the people here and for what we do. And when I go out in the world and I talk about, you know, the communities at large I'm involved with, and KOSP is mentioned, I always have this smile. And it's also, of course, because I listen and love the station. And I got to say, I did that all the way up into my mid-20s, something that go down to Los Angeles. I met Miles. He and I moved back up here, not together, but, you know, around the same time. And I come back and I'm making money and I'm an adult, right? And I'm going to have a kid and I get married and all that. And all of a sudden, I make kind of good money. So I decided to donate to KOSP because what the heck? And I think Miles and I did one of the GeekSpeak episodes. We donated a bunch of money at one episode. And I just thought that'd be a good thing to do because I like the station. Then that week, I felt even more connected to the station. I realized, wow, that support, even though I was already... You know, it was already a family to me and already a community. I'd already been listening to it for years and been here many times and did a show. The feeling of donating is a really great feeling. It, when you hear the station, and especially this whole week as you hear us ask for support, you'll go, yeah, I do support. I am a member. And there are some benefits of membership above and beyond that. But I got to say, that's the number one for me.
I actually liken it to donating money to a political candidate. Like, once you get to the point where, like, yeah, I want to put my money behind this person.
Yeah.
Because I actually believe in them. I actually want them to succeed. Then you have this emotional investment of, like, come on.
You can do it.
You can do it.
So this is what people that like sports do, right?
With yes. sports teams? Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
I never absolutely. Had that feeling about sports. Okay, there you go. We're taking your pledges to KOSP. The phone number is 888-777-1507. Again, that's 888-777-1507. We have 15 more minutes left. That's time for 15 calls at least. In fact, there's 5 people in the room waiting for your call. We have $1,300 left to go on GeekSpeaks today. There's 15 minutes left. It's easy to match. We are still doing a matching grant from a UCSC, an anonymous UCSC faculty member. Please do call in and donate. Your money will be met dollar for dollar. The phone number again is 888-777-1507. Again, that's 1-888-777-1507. Of course, you can do it at geekspeak.org. But I recommend calling right now because Rick's in the other room and he answers phones all the time for callers' questions. And now you can call and give him something. So anyway, please do. The phone number again, 1-888-777-1507. Miles, we've got time for another story for you, sir.
Sure. There has been a wonderful group of awards given out. No, it's a Nobel Prizes. And one of them was in chemistry. This had to do with crystals. And normally crystals have a particular shape to them.
Crystalline? Sorry.
Thank you for that. They have a... It's a regular shape, but it also makes them kind of brittle, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the crystalline lattice has a certain pattern geometrically, and as it builds, it produces a certain shape. So every crystal has, like, the angles between the two sides is defined by the atom's connection to itself, that layer. And then, of course, some crystals can be sliced along certain patterns. That's why mica, for example, does mm-hmm. that plating thing.
Right.
It has to do with the actual chemical.
And also bond. Why when mica breaks, it has a fairly right. clean break.
Yeah.
There's also people talking about quasi-crystals. In other words, a semi-regular shape, but more in a concentric circle configuration of atoms, as opposed to just a straight, flat lattice work. And most chemists were saying, like, yeah, okay, that's never going to happen. You know, like, come on. And so when a person working in Israel came across, or a professor at the Israel Institute of Technology in Haifa, he started playing around with the substance. Guy working alone. This is something that's interesting about chemistry, is that one person can do stuff, as opposed to usually physics, it's a team of yeah. people working together. And he's looking down at something and goes, like, huh, this is interesting. There's 10 little aspects to this. And he writes down this notebook, 10. This is funny. And he looks, and sure enough, it's this quasi-crystal. And he publishes the work. And then it gets shot down. People are like, no, this isn't possible. We're not going to publish you. And he tries again. And it finally gets published. And people are like, yeah, that's not going to happen. And so after 2 years of him pushing, going like, hey, look, I've got this. I've got this methodology. You can try it out. And, oh, my God, quasi-crystals actually exist.
Oh, I love that.
I
love the aspect that science, you know, someone goes outside what people think is regular, spends a lot of time in the lab, figures out how to duplicate that, publishes that, other people duplicate it, and everyone accepts it.
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic. That's how it should work. Very cool. Very cool. So quasi-crystals actually exist.
Yes.
That means that a mineral that we know about, or a molecule that we know about, or maybe it's even an atom, I don't know what the crystalline structure is, but exists that has another structure that's regular, that isn't its default crystalline structure.
On the contrary, it's somewhat irregular because it is going this lattice work that goes falls over itself. So that's the thing. It's most crystals are a regular pattern. They are a regular periodic pattern.
Yeah, yeah. And this one's irregular.
And this one's not.
Very cool. Quasi crystals. Where did this come from? This study. Do you know where he is?
The Israel Institute of Technology in Haifa.
Cool. Very cool.
By a professor by the name of Dan... I'm going to get his name wrong. Skechtman.
Welcome to the club. I get names wrong all the time. My name's Lyle Troxell. You're listening to KOSP. This is Geek Speak. In the air with me is Miles Elam. In the other room is a whole bunch of volunteers that are taking their time to take donations. We are going to continue with our news, but that shouldn't stop you from calling. If now's the time to call, 888-777-1507 and pledge what you think is fair to KOSP. Miles, I'm going to go ahead and jump right back to you because you always have an interesting thing to talk about in the week of tech.
Yes. This one is more having to do with security. And we've talked about security in the past and, you know, you're supposed to have a good password and whatnot. But most of us are moving on to mobile devices.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to worry about the security on those devices. A lot of times they'll have a passcode. A lot of us are familiar with that. And for iPhone devices, usually it's a 4-number code,
mm-hmm.
Except that we know that 4 numbers isn't all that secure. But then again, the time it takes to fill that out on there.
And the phone actually locks down if you fail too many times, so there's a little bit of that.
It can, yes. Yeah. And then again, there are the Android phones that have you follow a pattern on the screen. So you have nine or 16 points that you just draw a connection of those lines. Well, unfortunately, that security doesn't work if the lock screen doesn't work.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there's been...
So what we're talking about is when you don't use your phone for a while, when you first turn it on, and there's normally some kind of lock screen, and that's when you engage the password or the pattern.
Or when you turn the phone off, like right. when you hit the button at
you
the top.
You put it to sleep or whatever it is, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the Samsung Galaxy S2 doesn't quite work the way it's supposed to.
Okay.
Apparently, if you tap on the screen, in other words, the lock screen comes up, but you don't try to fill in a pattern. You hit, you let it disappear again, and then you hit the screen again.
It totally bypasses it?
It totally bypasses it.
Not a good thing. You know, it's amazing how hard security is to actually implement. Anyway.
Especially for this one device.
Yeah.
So, I'm not saying, you know, the sky is falling, oh my God, everything is horrible, but the next time you have a firmware update available for your Samsung Galaxy S2...
Upgrade it.
Upgrade it, yeah. And just be aware that this is out there.
Miles, do you have a lock screen on your iPhone?
Yes, I do. In fact, it's more than 4 characters.
What is it? Just kidding. How do you get more than 4 characters?
You can actually configure it to do more than that.
I don't do a lock screen on my phone.
I actually have to because I get my work email from the phone. Yeah. And for security policies, I had the choice of I could either get work email from my phone, which is extremely convenient, mm-hmm. or I could have a phone that I could just start up without having a lock screen on it. And as I thought about it, I actually was pushed in that direction of having a lock screen because I realized, like, wait, I look at my bank accounts on my phone and I look at, you know, I have other piece of email I wouldn't, it's
the thing,
okay.
The thing I've decided, the reason I don't have a lock screen is that I don't let go of it. There's 2 places my phone is. Well, maybe 3. My bedside, my pocket, or my hand. That's about it. So I feel like, if someone's going to get that out of me, they're going to have to do it intimidating. You know, they have to intimidate me. And if they're going to intimidate me, I'd probably give them their passcode anyway, if someone asked me, if they're threatening me or something. So I guess that's why I don't do it. But that's probably bad, right? I'm probably a bad geek.
Well, you did drop it.
I did drop it. That's the time that was the one time it wasn't even in my hand or my pocket, is when it was falling from my vein.
And hit the edge just wrong.
Just the wrong way to do it. That's true. You are listening to Geek Speak. Everything we talk about on Geek Speak is up at geekspeak.org, but that shouldn't stop you from visiting kosp.org, which is fundamentally transforming and is having some really wonderful content. I'm really quite excited about it. If you want to be more connected all the time rather than just listening to the radio as well, please do visit our website where a lot of our shows are podcasts as well. We currently have $900 left to go. We have 6 minutes. That means you just have to call and donate what you think is fair to KOSP for what you get from KOSP. It's an easy decision to make. We're not saying this is how much you should do. I think the general thing's about $130, but that shouldn't stop you if you want to donate more, or if you feel you can't stretch that into your budget and you want to donate less. We give you the option. That's a different kind of thing than you see most places. And keep in mind, a big thing that Miles mentions all the time, and I'm going to kind of trigger on this, is that here at KOSP, our audience, what do you say about commercialism and who the actual target is?
Ah, yes. With commercial radio, commercial media in general, mm-hmm. You think of like, oh, I like this show. I wish they would keep it around. Doesn't matter to the stations what you want.
In a commercial space.
In a commercial space. Does not matter at all because you are not the customer. Who are the product.
Who's the customer in those spaces?
The advertisers. The advertisers are the ones giving the money.
Right.
And they are the ones dictating, well, if you make a program that can get more people to watch, regardless of the overall worth of that, mm-hmm. reality shows, then they're going to get more money. And, and that's the TV shows that you see. Those are the radio shows that you see. That's the music that you listen to. Mm-hmm. And
for public radio, it's
for public radio, it is not the same. You are the customer.
Right. Right.
You are the client. You are the focus.
Right. You are the focus. We want you to be happy with our station. We want you to be happy with our content. We produce content for you. We don't have advertisers that we produce customers or, create customers for. We are listeners for. We produce radio for you, the listeners. And it's a very different pattern.
Right.
And
we have underwriters. But then again, underwriters are from the community and they're trying to build up that community radio. They could just as easily put a real commercial onto a commercial station.
We also, for the underwriters, people that aren't really in this area, you don't really get this, the underwriters that underwrite the station is only a small percentage. But on top of that, we don't say these people are awesome. We say these people, this company offers these features. So it's a very different type of communication we have with you. We don't try to push you into saying, you know, this underwriter is someone you should go to. We just say this underwriter's contributed to us and this is what they do.
Yeah, if you remember that beware of marketing thing, there's no marketing.
Right.
Well, except for right now.
And that's a
except for us and Fletching right now. This is our marketing.
Well, I mean, I think what we're marketing right now is pretty valid. What I try to do in a pledge drive like this is just let people know that the station they listen to is important to them and help them make that transition from being a passive listener to an active listener.
Yes. And in that vein, thank you so much.
Wait, 888-777-1507. Again, that's 888-777-1507.
Speaking of participating in the community, thank you, Daria from Felton, Ron from Santa Cruz, Miriam from Los Gatos, Mary from Santa Cruz, and Jean-Paul from Corralitos. And wants to give a thanks to the whole KOSP crew. Thank you very much, Jean-Paul. And also Kevin from Santa Cruz. Thank you all for your donations.
The geeks today are Miles Elam. I'm Lyle Troxell. We probably have time for one more news story, but first.
Geek Speak on KOSP is supported by EcoStruction. For 15 years, helping homeowners add or remodel existing space with solar power and water systems, radiant heat, and other sustainable solutions. Information about EcoStruction services and photos of past projects are at EcoStruction.com.
GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used with permission. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Home and Small Business Tech, providing IT support to businesses and tech support for home computers. Home and business tech specialize in protecting data and have been providing data, storage, recovery, virtualization, and maintenance for over 10 years. HASBTech.com. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP, Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at KOSP.org. This is GeekSpeak. I'm Lyle. Across from me is Miles. And we're here every week. We've been doing the show for about, 11 years?
11 years.
And we love doing it. And we love doing it because I personally love it because I feel like a part of a community. I go out in the world. I hear that people like KOSP. I go, yep, I like it too. And I actually contribute my time. I contribute my money. And it's important to me as well. And when I get another person that feels the same way about KOSP, it really is a wonderful feeling. Please help give that feeling to everybody by giving us a call at 888-777-1507. Again, that's 888-777-1507.
And as a last little thing, I'm going to switch gears a little bit with GeekSpeak because not all tech is metallic. I just want to have a link that I'm going to have up on the website after the show. It's about northeastern India, one of the wettest places on the planet, where making a bridge, you worry about it sometimes because the ground would erode and there'd be a lot of corrosion issues and stuff like that. So instead of making bridges out of metal or stone, they make them out of trees.
But not dead trees.
They grow them.
That's so awesome.
Trees that are grown to make bridges. And in fact, there's even a double-decker bridge tree. And you'll have pictures and more information available on geekspeak.org later today.
For KOSP and for GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. That was Miles Elam.